my God, this is great. First of all, how you doing? We have not seen each other since I was a teenager. We've been in communication, but we haven't seen each other in years. But let me just start by saying thank you because of you. And oftentimes people don't know that the effect that they have on people is long term, but you was very gracious. For those that know, first of all, let me say this is BJ Murphy, one of the first morning men that I had the opportunity to learn from when I was just starting off. I mean, even pre-starting off, really, I was in college, didn't know what I was doing. And I had the opportunity to, you know, you was that guy when I was coming up. So thank you for that tutelage. And then the other thing that people probably, they don't know, but you would know, is before I took the morning job here in Houston, and they offered it to me, and I was getting ready to search for a name, you were very clear and stern that the most important thing for you to do was keep your name on that show.
That's right. That's right.
And I said, you know, I was having problems with that because I said, well, that seemed like it might be ego driven and I don't want you were totally against that. You're like, if the show fails, if the show's successful, if there's decisions that need to be made, who does it all fall on? And I said, well,
you.
All me. And you were like, right. Well, the show should most certainly carry your name. And
that's right.
And to call it anything else would be a mistake. And I was like, wow. So because
it branded,
I did.
No, I'm saying it branded you. It branded you great, man. And you know, I'm proud of you because see, I thank you for saying what you said. It's very kind words, but you're so humble. It was made you successful as a great morning man in the city of Houston. Was your humbleness, and you're still humble. I've been watching.
I learned that from you.
Well, you know, but you know, like the scripture says, those who exalt themselves will be humbled, abased, and those who humble themselves, they'll be risen to the highest heights. And you definitely did that, man. I'm proud of you. And if I had anything to do with your natural ability as a leader and your talent, man, you were just like, you was born to do this.
Wow, thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Like, who is this guy, man? You know, he was bad, man. So, man, you're just talented, and I like what you're doing with the students now, and this is not over. It's not over for you.
No, it was an interesting transition, and we have to talk about that one day when we're not.
Yeah.
Transition that I did not know that I was getting ready to make. But it was totally on me, man. I just didn't know that I had the ability to walk away from said offer. And I thought I was crazy like a month after. And then this new opportunity, they really, really wanted me to do this. And I'm like, you know what? This is where I started. So it kind of makes sense. But I don't even, forget me. This is about you. And here's why I wanted to talk to you, Mr. Murphy. Not just because, you know, you remind me of where I started from and it definitely humbles you, but you have such strong opinions. And it's almost, if you know, and it's almost to me an oxymoron because you're so gentle, but your opinions are so strong. And so it always threw me off when I hear like, man, it's totally not the way you look because you're so, you're just a very humbling person yourself, so to speak. But when I hear some of the stuff, he's like, man, that's strong right there. I love it.
Yeah.
That's strong right there. And you stand behind all these, you know, a lot of people don't know that you're a Muslim brother.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that till years later. I think maybe I knew that, but you know, back in those days, you know, we was this.
Yeah, I wasn't in Islam back then when we were in Greensboro.
Okay, you were not.
Know me, but yeah, not until 1997 I became a member.
Okay, what caused that? I'm just curious.
You know what? I can tell you.
Because you don't walk around one day and just fall into like, hey, you know what? Tomorrow I think I'm going to, you know, become Muslim.
But I'm going to tell you what happened was I went to a Panthers game and, man, I got drunk out of my mind, brother, on that Sunday. And the next day, I'm driving down Batesville Road in Charlotte. I make a right turn and there's a store called Respect for Life Bookstore. And I go in there, peruse around. The brother says, man, help you, brother. I said, I'm just looking around. And I bought two tapes that I sat on my dashboard, because at the time I was living between Greensboro and Charlotte, so I was driving back and forth. So I had to get on the road about 3 o'clock in the morning to get to Power 98. And one day I put the tape in, man, and everything just started just dissolving off of me. And I heard something I never heard before from the minister. And ever since then, man, you know, I mean, it's amazing, man, what's happened in my life. But even that, the person that you heard back then is not the person that you hear now, because when I went to Dallas, I was doing mornings at KRNB. Mm-hmm. And after all those years, this is in 2004, when I got there, they said, yeah, man, you all right. You're pretty good, you know. But, you know, you're not what we want you to be. He said, I want you to go in that studio. I want you to say what you want. I want you to say it how you want to say it, and just be a man and just say it.
Okay.
I was like, really? And then, yeah, man. So me and Fly Tide were doing, we did an overnight, you know, thing just to get used to the board and everything. And man, that was the best time I had on the radio from midnight till 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow. So this is what it's like to kind of be yourself.
Mm.
And so from that point on, I mean, I've just been like being myself, man, and being free and not caring what anybody thinks about what I say. And that made me into a better communicator, a better morning man. And I had not gotten a chance to actually use that on a full FM signal.
I was going to ask.
Competitive signal. Yeah, like what you were on the box.
Yeah.
I haven't been on a big signal like that, except for when I was at B103 in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the same thing they asked me to do. I was solo, right? Because I've been used to working in ensembles like you have on the morning show. I was frightened to be on by myself. But I used that methodology of just being myself. And I was doing midnight to 5 a.m. And I was number one, BWGN and all the other talk stations. And actually was having better numbers than people on during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in Chicago said, hey, man, look, like you sound like a long-lost cousin, man. Because Elroy wanted me to do a morning show overnight.
Elroy was big time PD, for those that don't know, huge, huge, huge program for us back in the day.
So I did that, man, and ever since then, man, I ain't look back, bro. I mean, I've even gotten better at communicating. And I think that's one of the things that we need to teach our young people is that, you know, you go through those periods where you try to mimic people and try to imitate people. But the best thing you can do is be yourself.
Yes, sir. Yes,
and everything will fall into place. I promise you, you'll be free. And this is how people like Rush Limbaugh, the Howard Sterns, they don't need anybody to be or prop them up. But mm-hmm. It's good that you have people to kick off of, but you need to establish the fact that if nobody else is talking to me or no, the phones are not ringing,
you can hold a conversation
on a show me and that brother or sister that's on the other side of that radio.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So what have you been doing? Let me find out before I start asking anything. What have you been doing? So you said you transitioned off the big sticks broadcasting entities. So how have you been able to take care of BJ Murphy and family?
Good question. We've been scratching and scrapping just to survive, but I wouldn't trade it. Trade for anything. You know, I walked away from corporate radio back in 2014, right?
Mm-hmm.
And working with this brother. His name is Frank Neely. He owns a couple of radio stations. He's from the Charlotte area, right? Country boy that got a couple of stations. So I said, man, I'm looking for this. So I joined on with him and been working with him since 2014. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to put some things together, man. It's homemade radio. It's like mom and pop radio, but we've been patching stuff together and making it happen. And I've been doing podcasting. I got into that. I've been talking about this since 2013.
Yeah.
And my biggest problem was trying to convince other radio people that this was about to take place. This is how it's going down. And everybody, no, you can't make no money with that. So I sat on it until last year when I started the 20-Minute Morning Show podcast. And now I got another podcast that's coming up. And I do some voice tracking work to feed the family. Like I said, I do some independent contracting thing. So we make enough money to, you know, get some groceries in, but we're looking at some bigger things coming up.
Yes, sir.
In 2020, end of this year and 2021, I really feel like we're going to turn the corner and really be independent. But I am independent broadcaster now, and I wait on invoices to be filled. And you know, that's how I'm making it, man. You know, and the thing about it is, well, I don't know if we want to go there right now, but you know, we used to make pretty good money doing radio.
Yes, sir.
And what we have to teach our young people about saving money and investing when they have the opportunity in those money earning years. So I should be living on some yacht somewhere, you know what I'm saying? And you know, we just didn't thought this was gonna last forever when it comes to the type of money and the type of opportunity. But radio has changed drastically. But this is what I believe, Matt Hatt. I believe that coming up with the podcasting, and soon as things materialize more in how the measurement tools work and the monetization of it, oh man, you make more money than you ever made in your life doing the podcasting thing. This thing is huge, man. I went to the Range Summit last year in New York, and I got a chance to see firsthand how much of a closed-in society that podcasting is. They're making a lot of money.
Yes,
what they've done is created their own industry and insulated it. And they have the ability to get the massive amounts of traffic in, like NPR, the iHearts of the world. And they can come up with a podcast tomorrow and flood it and get 500,000 downloads and make gobs of money, man. It's amazing.
They figured it out.
Yes.
They figured it out. Well, I'm happy that you're still in the game. You're still doing it. And it's ironic because I watched a lot of you guys coming up, and it's funny you were talking about the financial side of it.
Yeah.
And I had such a long run, and I've been very blessed to have that long run. But I'll tell you, every step of the way, I always saved all the money. I never spent
it. Go ahead.
I didn't. So all these years, that's why when I made this decision to walk away, it wasn't that hard. It wasn't like I was walking away and I was like, how am I going to feed these people? I've been putting money away. Yeah. Okay, that's school. And that's what my house paid for. And so it was a different journey for me at this point. And it's still scary because you really don't think you're going to ever have to push the button and activate the I don't give a F kind of like switch.
Yeah.
And you're hitting. And at first you go into panic mode because, you know, you see me, I was a teenager doing this. I've been working. I've never was seeking out another job, never did an application. I never went through all these things.
Wow.
So it was as a human being, you first go into, you got fear, and then your survival instincts kick in. Like, okay, how am I going to survive? So at first you kind of like inside your head tripping. And then your brain is like, hey man, you know your bills are paid, right? So you're not hearing yourself because you're in survival mode because you've never done this before. You're like, why did I do this? So you're going through all these different things. And then month number two, you're like, oh, all those years that you didn't buy cars and didn't do all that and didn't drink and you didn't smoke and you was busy plotting away, putting your money away because you always, I always felt in our business that you could be a slave to your bosses if they felt that they could enslave you. So I always worked from a position of, you always got to have some, and I got this from a lady named Robin Breeden. She told him, you got to always have FU money.
Yes, right. Go ahead.
So I've always I kept 5% for me to live.
Yeah, that's right.
95% was just in case they start tripping money.
That's right.
And so I've been very blessed in that, and I own things and da 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 da. But
wow.
So I got that from watching you guys, to be honest with you. So it's funny that you mentioned that.
I love it, man.
This
walk in
this period of my life is a very interesting new walk for a grown ass man. I didn't go through the things that most grown men go through as far as looking for jobs and doing this and doing that. So this is kind of strange for me, but who cares about me?
Well, I'm going to add this to you, but remember this, your talent will always make sustenance for you. But you ain't never got to worry about having another opportunity. You know what I'm saying? You're going through this transition period. You're doing some great work now, but you're a young guy. You know what I'm saying? You got so much more. And you got some time to sit back and figure out because I think that the digital, the streaming piece
is going to be where it happens.
Because everybody got their phone in their hand. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather be syndicated on people's phones than a tower.
Because they're over-leveraged, because that's what we're seeing. All that money that they overspent on these stations, and I wouldn't really even try to go there today, but all that money that they spent on that, they've over-leveraged themselves. So they're in a bind.
I want you to think about
this. I have two radio music channels myself, digital stations that have listeners, there's advertising. And I spent significantly less than those guys.
Yeah. Because
people at the end of the day, as long as you curate whatever you're curating good and you got good content, as you know, people don't care as long as they can get what they want to get when they want to get it.
That's right. And I want you to do this when you get a chance today. I don't know if you've done this yet. In all the 20 years, I want you to try to add up how much money you actually made the box. And then add up, like, I'm talking about morning drive numbers, how much money in that big city that you made that radio station. And they paid you for what you made. It's no comparison. You know what I'm saying? So if you could do that for them, think about what you could do for yourself in the next 20 years. And I want you to look at like the next 20 years from now, at your age right now, it's like you starting another career.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. You know what I'm
saying? As an independent broadcasting, and it's on the streaming side. I had a brother that corrected me. I was talking about internet radio. He said, no, brother, ain't no internet radio streaming. Yep.
That's
streaming,
right.
Streaming stations. I said, you know what? I like the way that sounds, you know? And that's what it is.
I call it digital platform. It is not a radio station. The digital channel.
Right.
I have a digital music channel. I have two digital music channels. And then the other thing we don't think about, Mr. BJ, is all that social media we have. And I get it. We kind of sort of don't own it. But if you're on Facebook, you're on Instagram. Today, we have these products that we can use to benefit us, and we should. Yeah. You know, YouTube pages, podcasting, like you said before. So there is such a huge digital, like, I didn't look at it like that. I didn't look at my digital footprint and the property, my digital property that I had. And then when I looked at it, I'm over here like, oh, you got almost 500,000 from your websites to your social media to your digital music channels to, and I'm like, oh, and this can all be it could all have a financial effect for you.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And you're right. You never think about it when you're working in the confines of when you're working for someone else, you sometimes don't think about these things. And so I was forced to think about these things. I never even thought about my digital landscape until I was walking out the door and somebody else brought it to my attention. Man, you know that X amount of people follow you on this and follow you on that and follow you on that. And then I sat back and I started writing. I got my pen and my pad.
That's right. That's
and I started writing. I'm like, okay, I got 75,000 on that. Wow. Okay. I need to figure something else out. So thank you. I appreciate that. And because of your social, that's how I'm like, okay, Mr. Murphy is still out there getting at it. Saw your interview that you had did with the ex-wife for the DC Sniper. I'm like, wow, that was a crazy interview to me. When I seen it, I'm like, because we thought about the DC Sniper, but here's the funny thing. I never once considered his wife.
Wow.
Which is crazy because this story is really centered around his ex-wife. When you get, why was this guy wilding out with his child the way he was? But you know, sometimes when you're only getting the media spin of the story, We only back in 2002 got, you know, because at first we don't even know it's a black guy. One, two, and let's be honest, as folks of color, we're totally saying to ourselves that this is a white guy. So we're even like, you know, blown away when not only is he black, he's a Muslim dude. And prior to what was going on and, you know, with 9/11, you know, we had our own perspective of what Muslim brothers were in the United States because I grew up under the Farrakhan generation and public enemy. So that's what, when I think of it in the bow ties and what those brothers do. So when I saw that, this was like, it blew my mind. It still blows my mind when I think about it today. But when I saw that interview right there, I said, I got to talk to BJ Murphy.
Oh man, that's good stuff. Yeah, that was a great interview, man.
It was, because I love to be enlightened and I love to learn. And when I saw that, I felt bad because I never considered what this woman was going through, ever.
Yeah.
And her story is terrible. You know, this is a woman whose husband is, and you know, religion don't stop somebody from wilding out. You know, if you're a fool, you're a fool. You can be a Muslim fool, Christian fool, Jew fool. Fool has no boundaries.
That's right.
boundaries, no religion boundaries. So, like I said before, it blew me away. And you were so compassionate. It was a very compassionate. It was a lot of compassion with the interview. And it's hard to be compassionate when you're doing certain interviews, and you were. But I just, when I saw that, I'm like, I never thought about anyone talking to this lady. I didn't remember her. I didn't know her story. And it just blew me away. And then I'm like, let me see more of what Mr. Murphy talking about. And then I was like, looking at your views on a lot of the things that are going on in society right now. I saw something that you had said. And this is really, really what I wanted to get to the nuts and bolts of right here, is that you started talking about, and I don't want to, and maybe I'm saying it wrong, and if I am, correct me, but maybe it's a separatist idea as it relates to Black people having their own and white people having their own. And I'm like, okay, is that a separatist view where you're saying what really messed us up, messed y'all up, people of color, is you're wanting to be down with the man so much, and you lost a lot of what you had because you wanted to be down so much. And now here's where we are. And it seems to me there's no way to get back to a place which you've lost so much. There's almost nothing that can be done at this point unless you just leave. And then you leave, what do you have? So
that's because this our sweat and our blood of our ancestors built this country, right? We ain't going no daggone where. So if you look at this, this is what I've been telling my wife, and this sticks in my head a long time ago when I heard Minister Farrakhan say this. He said, we have given the government of America enough time to do right by us, right?
Okay.
For 400 and some years, we have been second-class marginalized citizens. We've given you enough time to make up your mind whether you want to treat us right or not. So now we, as self-respecting human beings, we deserve to live good. This is the only life you got. And you mean to tell me I got to die being a second-class citizen because I'm trying to get white folks to agree to treat me right? Hell no.
Right.
And so I said, no, I absolutely reject that idea. Mm-hmm. And that God, he wants us to be free, equal, and justified with the best in civilized society. And I'm 55 years old. I'm not trying to convince white folks to treat me good no more. I'm not begging anybody for anything.
Yes, sir.
This is our time. You know what I'm saying? So now, if you free, why don't you act like you free? That's like being on what you did. See, I'm a free Black man. I'm not nobody's slave DJ. You know what I'm saying? You don't tell me what I can and cannot say for a check. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I walked away from I stayed there 6 months, man. When I told you I was doing independent.
Yes, sir.
See, it's going to be very difficult for you to work for anybody anymore now. See, when I walked away from what I was doing, the first time when I was working with my brother that owns those little radio stations, he had leased one of them out, the one in Charlotte. So I had to find some more income. So I'm thinking I'm going back. I went back to QMG, and I was doing afternoons, number one. And I stayed there for 6 months. And I hate that I did that because, you know Shalyn Cole, you know what I'm saying? She's the program director.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know her, but I am familiar. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And she hired me, man. And she hadn't hired anybody until for years after Alvin Stowe had passed away. Mm-hmm. And she brought me in there, man. I stayed there 6 months, man. I left her because I knew I couldn't do it. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I'm going to tell you, I was in a parking lot one day before I went in to do my show. And I said, God, I know I'm not supposed to be here. Please give me a sign that whatever you want me to do, you know. And I get out of my car, walk into the station. Somebody comes around the corner. Hey, man, Shalyn want to talk to you. I said, okay. I walk into her office. She says, "Is everything all right?" Ding. I said, "Nah, I gotta go back to Charlotte. You know, this ain't working out for me."
Wow.
And so from that day, that's what I went. I launched out. I was doing some contract work for AARP, doing some voice work and helping this lady. And she was sending me $2,000 check. I was like, "Oh, I'm good." So I leave the station, and then she's paying me, and then all of a sudden the check stopped, right? And so I was in the Valley of Decision. I was in the court for non-payment of rent. You know, people wanted to evict me, and I mean, everything's just falling apart. But every time God would like slide a check under me and keep me going, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so I know I was on the right road. But to tell you about how fearless I was in leaving that job, I told them, and Brian Douglas, your old boss.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And they wrote a memo said, BJ is going back to Charlotte. He's going back to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the community in Charlotte. And they put that in a company-wide memo. You know what I'm saying?
Did you tell them that?
I told them. I said, "Yeah, I'm going back to Charlotte. You know, I'm not supposed to be here, you know, on the air for 7 hours and, you know, got me do. I ain't get out of the station till 9 o'clock now, man." And then they want me to talk for like 30 seconds and shit. I'm like, "Nah, man, I'm going back." And that's my story from there, man. You know, but every time there's a couple of times in my life, man, when I was in Chicago, I'm kind of off your question, but this is kind of important backdrop of who I am today.
Yes, sir.
I was going up to New York for an audition at WBLS while I was in Chicago. I was trying to get back on during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so Vinny Brown asked me to come up there, you know.
Vinny Brown, another
2 days.
PD, yeah.
Yep. And at that time, Derek Brown was the new PD at V103. And Armando Rivera was the MD, who's a good friend of mine. I told him I was going there for an audition. They called me when somebody told me I was on the air in New York. They said, "Hey, man, you on the air in New York? What you doing?" I said, "Hey, I told y'all, I'm trying to get back on during the day, man." He said, "Oh, man, we don't know what we're going to do, man." I'm like, I'm looking at my phone like, "What you mean?" "Man, you know, we got to talk about it when you come back." And then when I went in the office, they told me, it was August, right? They told me I only had like one vacation day left in August for the rest of the year. I'm like, these niggas must be crazy. So that's what I'm saying to myself, right? So I go back home, and one night, brother, I'm telling you, man, this voice came in my head. I'm sitting there looking at TV about 9 o'clock at night before I go to my shift at midnight. This voice said, "Just go home. Just go home." And it was just as clear as somebody talked to me, right? So I went to work that day, came home, went to work the next night, and I went in the bathroom, and I started just wailing, crying, man, because I knew that was the last night I was going to talk to with my people in Chicago. And then I resigned, slid that note under Derek's door, and then about 10 o'clock that morning, they called me in and said, "Look, we'll let you out of your contract." Later on that week, we're packing up to leave to come back. I get a call that my mother was being admitted to the hospital. They said she thinks she has ovarian cancer because her stomach had blown up. Wow. And the voice told me to go home to take care of my mother. I went to Goldsboro, North Carolina. I stayed there for 2 years until my mother passed away of ovarian cancer.
Wow. Wow.
So following the voice.
Wow.
Okay. So that's my story, how I got back to North Carolina. And since then, I've been trying to make it. Because prior to that, I don't know if you know this story, when I was at KRMB in Dallas, I was doing mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And we went there in 2004. We beat Tom Joyner in 2005. We got a syndication deal through Super Radio. We were on in like maybe six markets, about to get Milwaukee. And then Steve Harvey comes out with a syndication. And prior to that, 6 months earlier, the owners said they were never going to put Steve on.
Mm.
Asked me, did I buy a house, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah. In February, on the day of our two-year anniversary of being there, they bring me in the office and say it's over with. I'm like, what you mean it's over with? We got a syndication deal. We're going to put Steve Harvey on. First thing I did was ask about my people.
Yep.
What's going to happen to them? They're like, all right, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.